Welcome to Inside Admission, the podcast that gives you a behind-the-scenes look at the college admission process with the experts in and around college admission.
Welcome to the Inside Admission Podcast. I'm your host, Danny Palumbo, and I'm really excited for today's episode. Today we have Jenny from the Common App. So Jenny, would you like to introduce yourself, a little bit about your role, certainly about the Common App organization, and just tell us sort of what you view your job in the college admissions process, just in general.
Sure. So I am the president and CEO of Common App, which is a nonprofit membership organization committed to the pursuit of access, equity, and integrity in the college admission process. And we have nearly 1,000, I can now say nearly 1,000 college and university members from every state and from, I think, over 20 countries that use Common App as their main portal for students to be able to access education at their institutions. We also serve more than 1.3 million students, you know, who apply through Common App every year. In addition to Common App, the application itself, we also do a lot of programming around that, from text messaging interventions to try to help students get through the process, YouTube videos to try to help students, you know, understand how to complete the application. We're also home to Reach Higher, which is the college access and success organization started by former First Lady Michelle Obama during her time in the White House, really designed to create a college-going culture. And the two of us together in one means that what we're trying to do is help more students who might not otherwise think about going to college to think about going to college. And then once they do, and they go to the Common App, how do we help them get, you know, through that process successfully? And then ultimately wanting to help them be able to afford that and be able to attain that education, to be successful in it. So that's what the organization does. And my role there in it is basically to advance that mission of ours, access, equity, and integrity in the college admission process. And how we're trying to do that is to break down the many barriers that students face, both societal barriers that might say to a student, oh, you shouldn't think about going to college, and systemic barriers that students face, some students not having school counselors being able to advise them through the process, not being able to take a standardized test in the past has been a barrier, and it's much less of one today. But we're really trying to figure out how to make a process that Common App was started in 1975 as a way to reduce the stress in the process when students were filling out applications by hand and leveraging the incredible technology of the photocopier to have one form so that students could fill it out once and then send it to colleges. So we've advanced. We're now from the technology, you know, from photocopier, we're now with the cloud, right? Which is great. But yeah, that form is still the same thing that it was in 1975. And students and education today are incredibly different. And so that's what we're on a journey to, basically revolutionize this process with all of our college and university members, with our applicants, and with the school counseling community.
Well, I think it's such a great great mission and a great focus for the organization. It is funny. I mean, I remember too many years ago filling out that common application, that paper form, but I didn't photocopy. I was told, you know, you've got to use a pen for each one so that college thinks that you were the first one they filled out. So,
oh man, so that started really early, that gimmicks, kind of theme.
gimmicks and tricks all the way back. So, but really it's great to see the Common App has grown to be so much more and to be really driving a lot of positive change in the college admissions world in general. And so I think some of that isn't necessarily as visible to some of our students and parents. So I'm excited to be able to sort of share some of that here. And I can't think of a better person than yourself to join us for a straight up myth busting session. So pretty soon we're going to get into some college admissions myths and debunk those and talk about what the real deal is. But before we do that, one of the traditions on this podcast is always to go back a couple years and dish on your own college search process. What was that like? What was important to you? And how did that go?
Well, it went well because I do what I do today because of that process and not really understanding it at the time and how I ended up and being so grateful for the education that I got that truly was transformative, but also understanding that how I got there, I had every privilege. I grew up in Palo Alto, California, where Stanford University is. And my high school, Palo Alto High School, students went on to college and my parents expected me to go on to college. That said, my college search was largely random. You know, I didn't really understand what a liberal arts college was. I grew up in California with a large UC, University of California, and Cal State. Yep. So liberal arts colleges weren't really a thing that I understood. I heard about, you know, the Ivy League and all of that. And then I largely based it on where friends or people that I knew of had applied to college or were going to college. I did go on a college tour with my father and stepmother when I was in a junior in high school, but I really, again, I based it on where people I knew had gone. And also UCLA, because I liked UCLA better than Berkeley, which was nearby. So, I mean, just nothing to do with academic program or anything like that. So I ended up applying, I think it was like five or six schools. And I ended up going to Swarthmore College. And the reason I heard of it was my mom grew up in the town of Swarthmore. She didn't go to the college, but she grew up in the town.
That's funny.
And I was like, no way am I going to go to that small school. Because my high school was 2,000 students. Swarthmore at the time was 1,300. But then these two really great guys in my English class got an early decision to Swarthmore. And they said how great it was. And I thought, okay. And, you know, Swarthmore had a later deadline. And so I, at the last minute, I said, let me just apply because I was getting nervous, you know, about whether I would get in. I didn't apply early decision or anything. And then when I got my choices, I got this letter from the dean of admission. And for some reason, it resonated with me. And it was about how, you know, it was a community of mutual respect. And the goal was to, you know, educate people to use their educations to help others. And I thought, this seems okay. And that's where I decided to go. I was very lucky. My parents were really not involved other than my mother saying I should apply to Swarthmore. But they didn't look at my applications or do any of that stuff or bother me about it. And so I ended up going there and it was great. But I would characterize the search as random. So
yeah. This probably won't surprise you doing what you do and knowing the people we know, but almost every single college admissions professional or person around college admissions that I've interviewed has had some version of that story. It's almost like we're doing penance and reliving the process over and over again. So it's funny. It really is so true that the people around you, you know, whether it's family members, friends, you know, parents, coworkers, they really hold an outsized influence on this process, mm-hmm. whether or not it's visible, because, you know, your known world is your known world. And without tools like the Common App and some of the many tools out there to help students search, like Big Futures, you know, that's what you know. And so I think very often that can be helpful. People can be giving you insights and tips into schools. But also there's the flip side of that. A lot of the information we get isn't necessarily from verifiable sources. And so I think that's a great segue into our myth busting here. And so the first myth I want to tackle, which I think is one that a lot of parents feel, you know, I see on whether it's college Facebook groups or you know, the Reddit applying to college forum, you know, there's a real sense of heightened anxiety, especially with parents. I think with students too, but especially with parents, is that you really need straight A's to get into college nowadays. You know, you're not going to get into college or a quote unquote good college if you don't have straight A's, if you haven't maxed out the curriculum. So talk to us about that. Is that true? Is that a myth?
That is a myth, Andy. So let's talk about the Common App membership, for example. 75% of the colleges and universities that take the Common App admit more than 50% of their applicants. And I don't think that when you look at the market for higher education, most people, the vast majority of people, even at good colleges, quote unquote, I definitely underscore that, don't have straight A's. I will admit, even though it was about 100 years ago, I did not have straight A's in high school. And I got into college. I think a lot of it comes down to these unverifiable sources and some of the verifiable ones who just focus on a limited number of colleges in the country. As I mentioned with our data about Common App, which are incredible institutions, most of them admit most people. So the thing about your grades, or they are, it doesn't mean that your grades aren't important. They're absolutely fundamentally important, but it doesn't mean that you can't have had, you know, a class that maybe you're not as strong in, or a couple classes like that. It doesn't mean that maybe you had a bad year, but wow, you're really learning and doing well, or that you have other characteristics of success that can really make all the difference in the world for you. And schools look at students, you know, certainly look at their grades, but they look at much more. And they also look at the context of where you are in your life, what school you're in, all of that. So you do not need straight A's to get into college. And you need to just not worry about that.
And I think especially since the pandemic has hit, we've seen, you know, a range of actions taken by schools. Going fully remote, going hybrid, changing up grading to pass-fail, to the option to take a grade or take pass-fail by semester, by course. There's such a broad range. And I think that while well-intentioned, I think some of that has created more anxiety because parents are nervous about that. Students are nervous about the decision they make or how that's going to be viewed. You've talked to so many colleges over the past year and a half who've been grappling with this. What are you hearing from them when it comes to grades and to A's, or if students get a B or a C or pass fail? How are colleges dealing with that?
You know, how colleges are dealing with that is the way they always have, which is looking at a student and their circumstances and the opportunities that they've been provided with, some of the challenges that they may have faced, as well as the opportunities that they've had and have taken or not. And I think the reason I know, Andy, that one of the things that you and I care very much about is this admissions profession, and that's what admission officers' jobs are, is to actually understand more about the student than what's on a transcript. It's to understand all sorts of other contextual factors that make that person a student, if you will. And so they're incredibly, admission officers are incredibly caring about that context for students and take it very seriously. And so if students have had to study online, they're going to know that. And they're going to know if a student didn't have access to, their own computer, because you need to tell them that, actually. You know, that's the kind of thing that is really important. And the Common App last year added a section that, like, please share with us any impacts that we were calling it a community disruption. COVID sounds like a euphemism.
Certainly that.
But it includes wildfires and all these other, tornadoes, unfortunately, all these things that impact the lives of students. And you really need to take advantage of that opportunity to provide that admission officer with more context about, what you've been dealing with.
And I'm glad you mentioned the community disruption, because I was going to ask a follow-up question about that. But even with that, I think that there are two sides of the coin. I think some students are nervous that sharing anything there might be perceived as an excuse. Mm-hmm. And other students are afraid that leaving it blank means that, you know, they're missing out on an opportunity. So, you know, talk to us a little bit about how colleges are perceiving that and why students shouldn't worry as much one way or the other.
Yeah, I would say that question was put there because we wanted to, you know, make it so that students didn't feel like they had to write their essays about COVID and or the community disruption, that they could focus on something else, but be able to share some information that might not otherwise be readily evident in an application. And I can tell you, I think it was about 20% of applicants last year actually provided a response in that community disruption box. And I think it's important to note that the kind of response in that box are what changed in your circumstances that could have impacted the rest of your application versus all the great things you did during the community disruption,
right,
guess, using it as another essay to sell yourself. It's more not as an excuse. It's just facts. It's like, here's what I was dealing with. And I don't think any admission officer would look at it as an excuse. It was put there for just a very straightforward reason. And so I would use that, answer that question very straightforwardly and not try to make it into something that it's not.
Thanks, Jenny.
Yeah.
So myth number two, one of my favorites, the SAT and the ACT are a mythical equalizer in the process, where we can easily line students up from zero to 1600 with precision. All joking aside, SAT and ACT scores, I think there really is a lot of anxiety out there that these scores can either make or break your chances of getting into a college. And how much truth is there to that?
That is a myth. I'm debunking that myth. Only in some circumstances, I would say, for schools now that are requiring SAT and ACT scores, if you don't have one, that will probably make or break the opportunity.
Sure.
But if you do have one, or if you don't have one, it will not make or break your opportunity, for the same reasons I was sharing before about context and other factors in your application. You know, you're more than a test score. Students are much more than test scores. And this year, over 90% of Common App colleges and universities are test optional.
That's
and
incredible.
Test optional means test optional. And to give you a sense, too, of what's happening in the applicant pool writ large, last year, it was also just under 90% last year that were test optional as part of COVID. Only 40% of students reported a test score, self-reported it on the Common App. And in the previous year, it was 73% of students. So most students last year, we're not submitting scores. I think at this point in the process, it's about half of the students are submitting scores. And so if SAT scores, just like straight A's, were to make or break someone getting into college, most colleges would not have students. So that's all I would say. You are more than a test score. And again, admission officers would have incredibly boring jobs if it was just about a test score. it would really be boring. And I think there's also much more of an awareness now of access to tests. So what we found is that white students were more likely to submit a score than Black or Hispanic students. We found that upper income and first generation college students, upper income students were more likely than low income students to submit scores, and first gen were less likely to submit scores than students whose parents have gone to college. So there's absolutely a socioeconomic, you know, disparities in standardized testing, both the access to it, as well as the likelihood of you know, self-reporting a score. So I would say that all of our college and member, I can't say all, but most college and university members are very much, you know, interested in looking at the whole applicant and take much more pride in their ability to interpret a transcript in context, as well as along with every other aspect of a student's application.
Enjoying the podcast? Find us on the web at insideadmissionpodcast.com. And you can find and engage with us on social media, where our handle is Inside Admission on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. Now back to the pod.
So I think it's been really great over the past couple of years. The Common Application has really started putting out a lot of concrete data from member schools that help contextualize these things, because I think it's easy to hear College A and College B talk about their testing policies. But what I've heard when I've talked to students and parents is their frame of reference isn't the colleges that are on their list. It's their neighbors. It's their coworkers. It's their classmates in school. And so I think it does take concrete data like this to really understand what's happening and what these schools are likely seeing. And hopefully more data like that coming out from the Common App and from other organizations will help students and families be able to make some of those decisions where it does seem as if, okay, they're test optional, but is that a wink, wink, or are they really optional? And I think what we've seen is, with the exception of a small number of negative stories about a single digit number of schools, most schools really were optional. And the majority of students were not sending in test scores. And so I think it's really helpful to have that sort of data to provide proof points for students and parents to go through the process.
Yeah, definitely.
So this one I get a lot when I talk to students, when I'm on certain college conversation boards. I'm just a normal student. Or my child, you know, likes to play video games, and they've done a little bit outside of the classroom, but they can't fill up the Common Application activity sheet, or they haven't been captain or president of anything. So how could they ever get into college? Do you need a bunch of activities or a bunch of leadership opportunities to be successful in your college admission search?
There's an old adage, well, I don't know if it's old or whether it's an adage, but it's quality versus quantity. And I would say that quality is absolutely more important than quantity. And quality, of course, is a subjective thing. And I know that admission officers are not in the business of judging what activity is better than another. Or whether being captain is, you know, better than being, you know, a great teammate, or sure, you know, whatever it might be. They're just really interested in learning more about you. It's part of that contextual information that I was sharing. It's a space to share, you know, contributions and activities that you do, you know, for your family, you know, or with your family. Community activities, interests that you might have in, you know, reading or playing video games, you know, and being able to, you know, represent it just in a way that it's something that's important to you, and it's good context for an institution. And again, it's not something that people are going to judge, you know, what's better than. The debate is better than mock trial. no one is
well, but debate is better than mock trial. That's the one thing we all. No, I'm kidding.
And it's interesting because I think we allow up to 10 activities on Common App, and we have that conversation. You know, every year people say, you know, you should reduce the number of activities, and when we talk about that with students and with others, they get very upset. Because, you know, where are they going to put that information? But then you have other people saying, well, it's causing so much stress that students are trying to get 10 activities. And it's a balancing act, and it's something that's on our list of areas to look into from an equity perspective to do, yep. to do more analysis, and sort of get underneath, you know, what's the magic number? I don't think there is. There's always going to be, you know, differences of opinion about that. But I would hope that and want students to look at that as an opportunity just to share how they spend their time, you know, outside of the classroom, because in addition to being more than a test score or more than a straight A's or a GPA, you're more than a student. You are a human being, and, you know, would love to just learn more about you that way.
Thanks, Jenny. And are there a couple activities that you think of that you wish more students thought of as activities, things that maybe they don't put down, but they absolutely should because they're things that are important to college admissions officers?
Absolutely. I think sometimes we have work, you know, as an opportunity for students to share, and that's important. But taking care of, if you maybe you take care of your siblings or a sibling, that is quality time. That's a lot of responsibility. And I think that would be a great thing for more students to share and not just take it for granted because, you know, they're supposed to do it. It's in their house or potentially. That's an activity and a serious responsibility. So thinking about things that might not be as obvious because it's not in school or through some organization, but it's actually part of your family, family responsibilities. Definitely think about That's how great. You spend your time and let us
exactly.
know.
Exactly. So, the next myth has to do with recommendations. And so there's always questions around who's the right teacher to ask for a recommendation. And unless schools are very specific about the requirements, in which case you should follow those, you know, it's really up to students. And so there's I think there's a myth out there that you should go to a teacher that's given you the best grade or the teacher that's consistently given you A's. How much truth is there to that? And what really is important in these recommendations?
I would say, the best person to be a recommender, you know, within the requirements of, you know, whatever the school's requirements are the people that know you best. And whether you got a B in the class or a C, if that person knows your character, your personality, how you learn and how you interact with others as a community member, that's incredible. That's fantastic information for an admission office. Having the teacher that everybody goes to because they got an A in the class, we can see, you know,
yep.
that you got an A on the class. I can't see. I work at Common App and I don't see anything. Andy can see that you got an A in the class. And you don't need a recommender to tell you that. What you need are a recommender to tell you is about, you know, your personality, your characteristics, you know, what you're like, you know, as a student, or it could even be a coach or an employer, could be a recommender depending upon what the school's requirements are. And they'll be able to share things about your sense of responsibility and teamwork and collaboration. And I think those are, really important characteristics that are very much predictors of success. And, you know, those are the kinds of things that colleges are looking for as well, and in terms of how you would be as a community member. So do not go for someone famous, you know, unless that person knows you really, really well. That's because that we look at those like this person doesn't know that person. And the fact that the famous person actually would have some sort of sway, you know, no. It's not, you want content, not notoriety.
Yeah. I remember a couple roles back, there were a couple cycles where it seemed as if every 10th application had, the local state representative or the state senator two line, I strongly recommend, not what we're going for. I think what Jenny shared is really someone who knows you, someone who it's not always a bad thing if they've seen you struggle, because you know, they can see your character, they can see work ethic, they can see how you are interacting with other people, because a lot of this speaks to who you'll be as a member of your college community. All right, and myth number five, our final myth of the day. You shouldn't get too creative or too personal with your essay. Why is that a myth?
So that is a myth, because your essay should be you and what you want to write about and be authentic. So I would say, if you're not creative, do not try to be creative. That I would say. But if you have a different way of expressing yourself that is, you know, really is true to who you are and expresses, you know, your personality, of course you should do that. I think those are the essays, not necessarily the creative ones, but just any essay that I can, this is ancient, because again, I'm at Common App, I do not see anybody's application. I just remember the ones that were just authentic and had some self-reflection of a student that I just got to learn a little bit more about them. And from the too personal side of things, I worry sometimes that students feel they need to somehow share terrible things that have happened to them, that there's some pressure to do that. And students do not have to do that. It's just as just like how we wanted that COVID question, the community disruption question, because we didn't want students feeling like they had to talk about all of that. If there's something else in their lives that, you know, is more, you know, about them, you know, as who they are as a human being, rather than a particular event. We added a new essay prompt this year that sort of in that spirit, wanting to give students the opportunity to reflect on, you know, something that someone has done for you that has made you happy or thankful in a surprising way, and how that gratitude affected or motivated the students. And we did that based on some research that had been done about gratitude and how that can make people feel, right? Mm-hmm. And how writing about the positive influence that others have had on you can have on your own life, right? And so that was our effort, you know, as an organization to try to bring some joy to the essay process. And I would hope that students, you know, just write about, you know, what they care about, and do so without too much noise from all the unverifiable sources around them. So
that was the backup name for this podcast, was unverifiable sources. So
it's a good one.
So to put you on the spot here, Jenny, do you have an essay that you remember from your admissions days that stood out, and what was it that stood out? Maybe something creative or the way in which they shared their story.
I absolutely do, and I remember her name and where she went to high school, and fortunately where she went to college, because she went to the college that I worked at. But I was so impressed by it, because it's one of those things where you get a sense of an applicant, you know, from what their activities are, what their teachers might say about them, and what one of the activities of this student was creative writing. And she wrote this essay that was kind of like a story, but it was about how she had this dream that seemed so real about a silverfish, like a, you know, a bug, you know, in her house. And
the
how
age old Common App essay, right? Yeah.
Exactly. And she used it as a way to talk about her brain and how her vivid imagination, and it just rang so true. I don't know if I used the right tense there for rang or rung. I don't know.
It sounded good to me.
It seemed seemed like her somehow, based on all the other information in her application, just sort of this creative mind. And she just represented, it was just so pure and authentic. And I could also tell that she'd had fun, you know, writing it. And I think that's what I really loved about it, like, that I learned about her and I could see her enjoying that experience.
That's great. I'll share one briefly that this myth made me think of right away in terms of creativity. So we called this one the Apple essay. And back when I worked at Union College years ago, this one was famous. There was an applicant. He was at lunch with his friends. Time was winding down. They had about 2 minutes left. And he had his apple. So he takes his apple out. It's the last part of his lunch. And his friend looks at him and says, "I bet you can't eat that apple in 3 bites. And so then he has, you know, an aside to the reader, something you should know about me. You know, I'm someone who likes a challenge. And so when a challenge is laid down, I have to analyze it. I have to consider, is this something I can do? And if I'm not sure, is my heart in it? Can I go all the way? And so as he's assessing, he decides, yeah, I think I can do this. And so, you know, his lunch table starts paying attention. They start laughing a little bit. And, you know, the 1 minute warning bell sounds. And so everyone starts gathering their lunches. He takes this apple. He talks about like trying to find the perfect angle. He opens his mouth as wide as he can, feeling pain in his jaw. He tries to get as much of this apple as he can. And he chomps down. And so he talks about immediately the sense of pain in the roof of his mouth and you know, the bottom of his teeth, and he can barely even move his mouth. And so he's not even using his teeth. He's just squishing it down with the roof of his mouth. So it's just so descriptive. And you're like, where is he going with this? And so then he notes that, you know, his friends start to cheer. And so people come over from other tables. And then the final bell rings and no one leaves. And so he's there and he has 2 bites left, and he has just a little bit more than half the apple left. And so he looks at it. He looks around the room. Everyone's stunned as he takes the rest of the apple and forces the entire thing into his mouth. And so he again goes through just the pain and torture of pushing down the stems, the seeds. And, you know, he's talking about what's happening elsewhere. And then he finishes up saying, and he swallowed the last of the apple. And, you know, he then ended with a reflection that said, you know, I'm someone who likes to approach life with a sense of humor. I'm a competitive person. You know, my friends mean a lot to me. And so does the time we've spent in high school. And so funny memories are things. And so, like, he ended up really reflecting the silly, ridiculous, sort of over the top story. But he reflected on who he is and the things that matter to him, and was able to tie it to what he's looking for in college. And so it's funny, you know, it's just like that piece of advice around creativity. You know, if you're not a funny person, don't try to be funny in the essay. That's not like when to start your stand-up routine. Right. But it's just a good reminder to people that if you want to do creative writing, journaling, you know, like I feel like we've seen it all. As long as you're telling the admissions readers a little bit about yourself, about the things that matter to you, that's really what is being used in that essay. So
that's a great story. I love that.
I love that essay. So, so now we'll sort of wrap things up with two questions I really like to end on, you know, with all the experts we bring in here for the podcast. And that is, first, students who are just starting this process, maybe, you know, juniors who are just heading into that winter break, who, whether they know it or not, are about to be inundated with all sorts of college mail come mid-January. What piece of advice would you give those students?
I would say flip the script. Those colleges are applying to you, and you are much more selective than any of them will ever be, because of out of, let's say, 2,000 four-year colleges and, you know, 3,000 two-year and four-year nonprofit colleges, you're going to pick one. And that's really up to you. And so you're really, even though it doesn't seem like it, you have more control over this situation than you might think. And I hope that you really internalize that and enjoy the process of learning about all these different places and having the opportunity to do some self-reflection about what places do you personally, like. And if you have a particular, academic interest, where might that be an act that have that academic interest and that you feel like you could thrive? And whether that school, admits more than half of the applicants, great. That's fantastic. That's what I would really like you to do. And I also, certainly a huge part of this process is affordability. Make sure that you're factoring that in, in the sense of at least knowing what the institution's financial aid policies are, because that is the thing that can often disrupt you being in the driver's seat. So make sure that you're aware of that and take a objective view of things, but then, what place do you like? Don't worry about the unverifiable sources that didn't go there.
So I love that, flipping the script. I love it. And that's a selectivity rate that even those in Palo Alto would be shocked by. So and then finally, for the parents out there, what piece of advice would you give parents who are just starting this process?
I would say it's a really stressful time, just in the sense of it's a student, particularly students going from high school to college. That's a huge transition, not only for the student, but also obviously for the parents. But this is also an opportunity for a student to grow, and to mature and to start to take ownership of their future. So really listening to them and giving them the opportunity to lead in this effort, because it really is for them. It is ultimately their life and their choice. And certainly the parents hopefully are supporting the students through this journey. But giving them the opportunity to make decisions and to not hear about it all the time, I think is really, really important. But one of the things that I know that we see sometimes is that when parents have been overly involved, the student doesn't necessarily own the decision. And then that doesn't necessarily work out once a student enrolls at a place. So you really want the student to own the process and own the decision.
Great. Well, thank you so much for joining us, Jenny. I really appreciate it. And before we go, why don't you let folks know where they can find the Common App, and if there are any resources that they should be aware of that the Common App has.
Absolutely. So you can find us on the World Wide Web. Ooh. At www.commonapp.org. And we provide actually 24/7, 365 service to students. So when you have questions about something in the application or something's not working right, please take advantage of that. Don't stress out about it. We have all sorts of resources about the college search process, about how to use the Common App. We have just general information. We have great videos from people like Andy and others who can provide you with some college admissions advice. And just really, and we have a search engine that I think is pretty cool, because it helps you search on application requirements, so you can actually go to the Common App, see, okay, test optional, and you can see the more than 900 colleges and universities on Common App that are test optional. And you can feel better about that. You can also check a box to see who doesn't have an application fee. And that's half of the Common App members don't have application fees. So there are just a variety of things that can help once you have figured out kind of where you might be interested in going, how can I do it? So check out that website. And again, don't hesitate to contact us through our Solution Center if you're having any challenges.
Excellent. Thanks so much for joining us, Jenny.
Great. Thank you, Andy. This was fun.
Enjoying the podcast? Find us on the web at InsideAdmissionPodcast.com. And you can find and engage with us on social media, where our handle is InsideAdmission, on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook.